Welcome back to A Year of War and Peace, the podcast where we go from War and Peace Zero to War and Peace Hero in 1 year flat. We just passed 10,000 downloads last night, so I want to say a huge thank you to everyone listening and to everyone who has listened and shared the podcast and helped it grow to this point. I posted on Reddit today on the A Year of War and Peace subreddit, saying thanks to everyone there for getting involved with the podcast. And I'll read you some of the comments now that were responses to that post. Cry Blurred said, "Thank you. It is a great companion to a great book." Brian E. Denton said, "Great podcast. Congratulations." Mellow Yellow said, "Look forward to listening to your podcast every morning. Great job. Thank you." Looker Thunderstorm said, "Good on you. You deserve the success." And Super Lota said, "Congrats." What an awesome community. All right, let's get into today's chapter. It is Book 4, Chapter 13. For 2 days after that, Rostov did not see Dolokhov at his own or at Dolokhov's home. On the third day, he received a note from him. "As I do not intend to be at your house again for reasons you know of, and am going to rejoin my regiment, I am giving a farewell supper tonight to my friends. Come to the English Hotel." About 10 o'clock, Rostov went to the English Hotel, straight from the theatre, where he had been with his family and Denisov. He was at once shown to the best room, which Dolokhov had taken for that evening. Some 20 men were gathered round a table at which Dolokhov sat between two candles. On the table was a pile of gold and paper money, and he was keeping the bank. Rostov had not seen him since his proposal and Sonya's refusal, and felt uncomfortable at the thought of how they would meet. Dolokhov's clear, cold glance met Rostov as soon as he entered the door, as though he had long expected him. "It's a long time since we met," he said. "Thanks for coming. I'll just finish dealing, and then Ilyushka will come with his chorus." "I called once or twice at your house," said Rostov, reddening. Dolokhov made no reply. "You may punt," he said. Rostov recalled at that moment a strange conversation he had once had with Dolokhov. "None but fools trust to luck in play. Or are you afraid to play with me?" Dolokhov now asked, as if guessing Rostov's thought. Beneath his smile, Rostov saw him in the mood he had shown at the club dinner and at other times, when, as if tired of everyday life, he had felt a need to escape from it by some strange and usually cruel action. Rostov felt ill at ease. He tried but failed to find some joke with which to reply to Dolokhov's words, but before he had thought of anything, Dolokhov, looking straight in his face, said slowly and deliberately so that everyone could hear, "Do you remember we had a talk about cards? He's a fool who trusts to luck. One should make certain. And I want to try." "To try his luck or the certainty?" Rostov asked himself. "Well, you'd better not play," Dolokhov added, and springing a new pack of cards, said, "Bank, gentlemen." Moving the money forward, he prepared to deal. Rostov sat down by his side, and at first did not play. Dolokhov kept glancing at him. "Why don't you play?" he asked. And strange to say, Nicholas felt that he could not help taking up a card, putting a small stake on it, and beginning to play. "I have no money with me," he said. "I'll trust you." Rostov staked 5 rubles on a card and lost. Staked again, and again lost. Dolokhov killed, that is, beat, 10 cards of Rostov's running. "Gentlemen," said Dolokhov, after he had dealt for some time, "please, place your money on the cards or I may get muddled in the reckoning." One of the players said he hoped he might be trusted. "Yes, you might, but I'm afraid of getting the accounts mixed. So, I ask you to put the money on your cards," replied Dolokhov. "Don't stint yourself, we'll settle afterwards," he added, turning to Rostov. The game continued. A waiter kept handing round champagne. All Rostov's cards were beaten, and he had 800 rubles scored up against him. He wrote 800 rubles on a card, but while the waiter filled his glass, he changed his mind and altered it to his usual stake of 20 rubles. "Leave it," said Dolokhov, though he did not seem to be even looking at Rostov. "You'll win it back all the sooner. I lose to the others, but win from you. Are you afraid of me?" he asked again. Rostov submitted. He let the 800 remain and laid down a 7 of hearts with a torn corner, which he had picked up from the floor. He well remembered that 7 afterwards. He laid down the 7 of hearts on which, with a broken bit of chalk, he had written 800 rubles in clear upright figures. He emptied the glass of warm champagne that was handed him, smiled at Dolokhov's words, and with a sinking heart, waiting for a 7 to turn up, gazed at Dolokhov's hands, which held the pack. Much depended on Rostov's winning or losing on that 7 of hearts. On the previous Sunday, the old count had given his son 2,000 rubles, and though he always disliked speaking of money difficulties, had told Nicholas that this was all he could let him have till May, and asked him to be more economical this time. Nicholas had replied that it would be more than enough for him, and that he gave his word of honour not to take anything more till the spring. Now, only 1,200 rubles was left of that money, so that this 7 of hearts meant for him not only the loss of 1,600 rubles, but the necessity of going back on his word. With a sinking heart, he watched Dolokhov's hands and thought, "Now then, make haste, and let me have this card, and I'll take my cap and drive home to supper with Denisov, Natasha, and Sonya, and will certainly never touch a card again." At that moment, his home life, jokes with Petya, talks with Sonya, duets with Natasha, piquet with his father, and even his comfortable bed in the house on the Povarskaya, rose before him with such vividness, clearness, and charm that it seemed as if it were all a lost and unappreciated bliss long past. He could not conceive that a stupid chance, letting the 7 be dealt to the right rather than to the left, might deprive him of all this happiness, newly appreciated and newly illumined, and plunge him into the depths of unknown and undefined misery. That could not be. Yet he awaited with a sinking heart the movement of Dolokhov's hands, those broad, reddish hands with hairy wrists visible from under the shirt cuffs, laid down the pack and took up a glass and a pipe that were handed him. "So you are not afraid to play with me," repeated Dolokhov, and as if about to tell a good story, he put down the cards, leant back in his chair, and began deliberately with a smile. "Yes, gentlemen. I've been told there's a rumour going about Moscow that I'm a sharper, so I advise you to be careful." "Come now, deal," exclaimed Rostov. "Oh, those Moscow gossips," said Dolokhov, and he took up the cards with a smile. "Ah!" Rostov almost screamed, lifting both hands to his head. The 7 he needed was lying uppermost, the first card in the pack. He had lost more than he could pay. "Still, don't ruin yourself," said Dolokhov with a side glance at Rostov as he continued to deal. "All right, there we have it, another chapter down. Oh no, young Rostov, what are you doing?" That was kind of painful to watch him being played like that. Absolute sucker. So by now we must all surely hate Dolokhov. Here he's just deliberately screwed over poor Rostov. And it's quite clear that he's sort of enacting some kind of revenge on him. He's a nasty character. Matthew Law said, "Dolokhov is rapidly becoming my least favourite character. Notwithstanding any compassion towards his mother and sister, he's been pretty horrible towards his supposed friend Nikolai, not to mention poor Pierre, in a way that seems much more intentionally malevolent than the comparatively benign mischief of tying a bear to a policeman." Obi-Wan Spicoli said, "He's a jerk. I was suspicious as soon as we found out Natasha didn't like him. He sounds like a sociopath to me." Prestia said, "Isn't he also the guy that was sitting in the window from one of the first chapters? Or was that someone else?" Obi-Wan Spicoli said, "Yes, that's the same guy." Prestia said, "Well, I agree, he's a massive jerk. Nevertheless, he seems to be very well constructed by Tolstoy. He didn't just assign him all the negative attributes he could think of at once. He started off as a friend of some good, decent characters, and he was no different than any daring, fun-loving young man. He seems to become more and more of a horrible person without anything in particular happening to him. But I think that's actually because we start to see who he really is, rather than him actually becoming more evil. But besides being such a douchebag, I actually enjoy his presence in the novel a lot, just like I enjoyed Ramsay in Game of Thrones, who was also very much a negative character, though a way different kind. There are just some bad guys in books and TV that are very nicely built. They add so much to the story that it would be a shame if they stopped being part of the action." Yeah, I agree with that. He's shaping up to be a really good bad guy. One of those characters that you just love to hate. Mellow Yellow said, "I found it interesting that Rostov had a moment of clarity while waiting for Dolokhov to deal the cards, similar to the one Andre had while staring at the sky after being shot. And then Rostov quickly loses it." Well, Nikolai, you know, I've said a lot of times that I like him, but he is very immature. And in this chapter, he was very immature. Let's hope he gets his act together soon. All right, that's going to do us for today. Thanks very much for listening. I'll see you tomorrow.